8:15 p.m. West Pakistan time, 9:15 p.m. East Pakistan time. This is Radio Pakistan. The President, Mr. Zulfiqar Ali Bhutto, addressed industrialists and businessmen in Karachi this morning before he left for Ankara at the start of a tour of the Middle East and North Africa. We now bring you the recording of the President's address.
Gentlemen, I have called you this morning, given you the trouble to see me here at the airport because I have to leave in an hour and a half for a number of countries in the Middle East and North Africa. This visit is necessary, as you know, because our problems have become so complicated that foreign affairs and internal affairs have unfortunately become intertwined, and it takes some time to untwine them. For a long time, I used to warn the former government, of which I was foreign minister, about the intensive foreign interference in our internal affairs. In the world of today, there's always foreign interest, and in underdeveloped countries, there is foreign interference as well, but countries try to limit that interference. In our country, unfortunately, we never tried to limit foreign interference. On occasions, we encouraged it, with the result that today we find ourselves in such a position that even on some of the elementary matters on which otherwise we could have acted on our own, consultation, cooperation has become more than was or ought to have been necessary. We have a number of important problems: our East-West relations, our relations with India, and all these problems cannot be really approached in isolation, nor can we find permanent solutions to them in isolation. So although it's imperative for me to be at home, but by going abroad, I am going with the purpose of the problems that concern us domestically, concern us at home. We have to mobilize public opinion, we have to mobilize world opinion, we have to get international support and understanding. We have the question of our prisoners of war who are away from us. They won't be in Pakistan on Eid. So when my countrymen who have suffered and sacrificed for Pakistan's integrity, when they are in a foreign land standing behind barbed wires, I don't see why I also should not be working. Of course, I will observe Eid, but I can't celebrate it. I'm too pained and humiliated and insulted to celebrate it. And I won't celebrate it till national honor is vindicated. So the point is that I have to take into account my country's national honor, my country's national prestige, our country's national, your country's national. It's all of our country. And I won't be able to do anything alone. I can't do anything alone. A man can destroy a country, but one man can't build a country. I need the cooperation of everyone, and I'm coming to that in a few minutes' time. So this purpose, this visit is with a national purpose, with a national objective. I'm sorry I have to go at this time, but as I said, for me there is no celebration involved these days till we wipe out the stigma. And in this connection, I had invited some of the diplomats to Larkana, and I had talked to them candidly, and I had spoken to them. I said, please give us some time. All we are asking for is some time to resolve our problems. These problems, they go right down to the heart. They are gut issues for us. It's a question of our national unity. It's a question of the dismemberment of our country. It's a great pang for us. The wounds are very deep, and we need some time. I was pleading for was time, and that also a reasonable period of time, so that we can try and focus the picture back into some shape. And for that, I thought the world would understand and give us a reasonable period of time. We are not imposing any conditions, but we have to have a little bit of time to try and come to some settlement, whatever that settlement is. We must be given some opportunity to have a dialogue, even an initial dialogue, even a preliminary dialogue. And that dialogue cannot take place while foreign forces are on the soil of Pakistan. But I went a little further and I said in Larkana that I would even perhaps be flexible on that if the leaders of East Pakistan want Indian troops to remain on East Pakistan soil and they want them for some reason, then we can also consider what further steps we can take even in the light of that. Because you know a very unusual situation occurs today and it's a very important thing and the world must take note of it. That in the first place, India invaded East Pakistan by military force on the pretext that she was going there because the majority of the people wanted her to take that step. Now her Prime Minister has said that Indian forces must remain there to protect the minority of Biharis. So these are very ominous signs. And is the international community to close its eyes to these developments? And I know this subject pretty well. I don't have to be lectured and tutored on it. But I welcome anyone's suggestions. But because we are treading very delicate ground, I made an appeal some time ago to our great experts on politics and foreign affairs that please do not try to avoid a discussion on foreign policy for some time. That is made in good faith because it's a crisis of the greatest magnitude in which all factors and forces are at play. And there are so many other issues you can talk about. There are so many other matters. The press is free now. But even in the freest of free presses, there is some discipline exercise, briefing takes place, and that briefing is adhered to even in the United States, in Britain, in France, in every country. And so the freedom of the press also means that national interest must be taken into. And there are so many other things that I said they can talk about. They can abuse me, they can abuse you, they can abuse other people. But why go into this realm today, when only for a few, for a brief period of time? Now, this doesn't mean I'm silencing them. I don't want to silence them. They could write to us. We'll welcome their suggestions. They could seek an interview and come and have a discussion. Because some of the statements that have been made by our so-called experts or leaders, they have only given a pretext to some countries to take certain steps. And pretext, as I say. But why give a pretext? I'm making this as an appeal. If they want to damage the country's cause, well, I can't stop it. As I said, I can't be the custodian. I don't want to be the custodian. I can't be the prefect. I don't want to be the prefect. As I said, it's impossible for one man to make a country. It's possible for one man to destroy it. But they are unnecessarily complicating a very complicated problem as it is. Now, in the light of this background, I see today that we were not given this small opportunity. I don't like to do it. We have accepted certain principles. We must proceed on the basis of principles. Principles are inviolable, but those principles we have to adhere to. We were not given this short period of time, very short and limited period of time that we seek. In spite of our appeals, in spite of the fact that India has tergiversated, dangerously tergiversated from a position to say that she has gone there on the will of the majority, now to say that she is going there to remain because she has to protect the minority. In that case, no country in the world can be free at all. The gates of armed intervention have opened all over the world because a minority anywhere can get up and say we need support from a neighboring country or from some other country. So the question is the world should take cognizance, give us that reasonable period of time, and we mean what we say. So unfortunately, in view of this, I don't like it. I have great respect for the country that has yesterday recognized the East Pakistan situation according to its own light. I respect them, I respect their leadership, but principles are inviolable. So I'm sorry that before leaving Pakistan, I have to announce to you that we sever diplomatic relations with Yugoslavia for having yesterday recognized this situation in East Pakistan according to its own light. We don't, and again I repeat, we don't like it, but we are pleading for a short and reasonable period of time. And if with Indian occupation in East Pakistan and the interpretation that India is giving to that occupation, if still there are certain countries who want to rush to it, what is the rush? After all this, if it has become a permanent reality, a matter of a few weeks or so, whatever the period is, will not make any difference. That permanent reality will still be there. So why is it fleeting away? Or do they don't want it to change? They want this temporary reality or whatever it is to become permanent by preempting it in this fashion. So we have suffered enough. We have suffered from military force. Now we have diplomatic coercion is being applied to us. This is nothing short of diplomatic coercion. So in the light of this, I'll announce. Now I come more closely to the problem that I have not come here to threaten you. I have not come here to browbeat you. I have come here to ask you, to appeal to you, and you take my word for what I say. I have already said that as far as this period is concerned of martial law, during this period, no more industries will be nationalized. That's all. This is final step. The categories of industries. Some industries were left out of those categories. So therefore, action was taken. It is not that we went back on our word. I can't speak for Parliament because in Parliament, the majority will prevail. How can I speak for Parliament when I'm only one member of a National Assembly? But in the present situation, I can say that we don't intend to nationalize industries beyond what we have done in the categories. If there are one or two left out of that category, then they'll have to fall within the category. That is one assurance. Second assurance is, believe me, I want you to play a positive role in the development of Pakistan. I'm not an illiterate person. I know your importance. I know your need. And I want you to fulfill that role and that importance. You think I'm your enemy? I'm not your enemy. Your friend was your enemy. Your friend was your enemy, and that is the regime of Ayub Khan was your enemy. Because at that time, industrialization went without any rational framework. It was free for all. It was just go on and do what you like. Take it in any form or shape. Without a social content. Without an economic content. Without a content, egalitarian content. It simply can't happen in the 20th century. Pakistan can't be an exception in the 20th century, to the wind of change, to the requirements of modern times, to the social upheavals, to the expectations of the people. And we cannot work in isolation. In that period of time, when the policy of industrialization was set out by the regime of President Ayub Khan, slowly, this realization among the laboring class other mounted because, as I said, it was free for all. And if they had imposed some rational method of development, I don't think you would have come to this pass today. Because at that time, the most irrational methods were. Foreign loans, the debt, you see the debt itself. It's a colossal debt. It's a frightening debt. Now, the object was that industrial production will go up and we'll be able to pay the foreign debt from industrial development. That objective has not been fulfilled because you know that even the raw materials that are not available on that also, there was no unrestricted participation. A country that has been free for 24 years is getting foreign exchange for commodity aid, for perishable items. And we are getting foreign exchange, we have to pay in foreign exchange a colossal amount. And now this is the position. So don't blame me for it. These are the objective conditions that came into play. If you people didn't realize it, if you didn't see beyond your... There were some of you who realized it, tried to see that no, this can't do, it's too unnatural. Even in countries like Japan, which is the great industrial power of the world, people are restricted. You can't go into everything. Here, the same person, same group going in for banking, for insurance, for industry, for all manner of industries. And in that way, what was the investment involved? There was PICIC, IDB, other institutions. Tomorrow, if a zamindar, or no matter how powerful of tribal leader he is, if he thinks he can just go and acquire 70,000 acres of land, he can't do it. So the question is that as you sow, so shall you reap. As we all sow, so shall we reap. So don't think that this wrath is generated against you without without causes. So the idea is, let's get together and bring reconciliation. Without reconciliation, we will live a hazardous and a tense life. Don't want that. I don't want that. I want you people to be respected people of the community. You say respectable people are being thrown into jail. You call yourself respectable. I can call myself respectable. But what do the common man call us? Parasites, they call us. Bloodsuckers, they call us. Now let's go ahead and not not be called parasites, bloodsuckers. There are industrialists in other countries. There are laboring classes in other countries. There is not this tension. I want to reduce these tensions, remove these tensions. And believe me, after this period is over, you will find a real certainty returning into the country. And production will go up. There will be harmonization because we will have reasonable, good, humane labor laws. We want production norms. We will set all these into motion. There is some trouble. I know you're facing difficulties. We are all facing difficulties. But be a little patient and we will resolve these problems. Now, as far as I want, therefore, to tell you that we are prepared to have another chance, a second chance, because I thought it's better that I come and talk to you, I speak to you. I could have done that on the first day. Some of you said, why doesn't he speak to us himself? I'll give you the reason. I could have done it. I know you, some of you are my friends. I've known you very well. And the question is, I could have done it. I didn't do it also. There was a reason for it. Because, you know, the first president and the second president of the recent, my immediate predecessor, they fraternized so much with the industrial class as a class. You can have individual friends. That's different. But when you, they got a bad name. I don't want to get a bad name. I don't want to spoil my hands. So I don't want, on individual basis, I know so many of you from years. I can meet, we can have to. But immediately, the same pattern is being followed. He's doing exactly the same thing as the other. So that's why I didn't. Secondly, why have he taken some restrictive measure? Why has he arrested certain? Yes, because some of you, unfortunately, were talking too loosely. I know the base is agricultural base. I'll fall back on agriculture. Don't say that the industry will collapse. Industry has collapsed. The country has collapsed. If I can deal with a country that has collapsed, I can deal with an industry that has collapsed. And it's an industry for the few and by the few. So I'll fall back on agriculture for some time to come and rebuild. So this language is not. We are indispensable. Everyone is indispensable. And everyone is not indispensable. So that's why I had to take that action. Now those people also, I've ordered their release. Both Daud Walika and General Habibullah, all three of them. The other two are not businessmen. The other two who are USAID and Mr. Durrani, they were service people. And they were disciplined by also service laws. There were the service laws as well as laws applicable to a citizen. So they violated two laws. Investigations are going on. Much will come to light. It's not that it's capricious or arbitrary. It is not capricious. No capricious or arbitrary action will be taken. No action will be taken on the basis of whims or on the basis of likes and dislikes. So now the question is, please respond. Please cooperate. I have given you my pledge of cooperation. And the pledge is not of a dictator, but pledge of a representative of the people, which is a different kettle of fish. But the question is now that don't feel reluctant or nervous or frightened that we have not made any declaration. So now if we make any declarations, then they will take us to task. No, that will not happen. Nothing will be revealed. No names will be disclosed. What the declaration is, who made it after this date and who made it before, nothing of the kind. We'll begin anew. But I want now genuine cooperation, because after all the question is, if Pakistan dies, then where will we all go? Where do you want to go to? Canada is very cold. Canada is very cold. And south of France is boring. This is a lovely country. It has winter and summer throughout the year. People are fine. Stay here. Why do you want? There's no better place than Pakistan, really. And we'll make it that first class place where you not want to feel to go out. I have not stopped education of your children. I want those who want to have, because our education standards are low, I want to bring about improvement. I will permit you to go abroad, to do your business, to go on your holiday. But the question is, bring back the wealth of the money, the bulk of the money. We need it for our armed forces. We need it for the development of the country. We need it for repayment of loans. And therefore, in this spirit, I tell you that when I come back, I hope there'll be a better response. And I am giving up to the 15th of February, the period of time, so that you can make your adjustments. No hard feelings, because nothing is done for individual purpose, all everything is done for the state. So no hard feelings, and please go back, rest assured, sleep well, and give my love to your children. Thank you very much.
The President, Mr. Zulfiqar Ali Bhutto, addressed industrialists and businessmen in Karachi this morning before he left for Ankara at the start of a tour of the Middle East and North Africa. You've been listening to the recording of the President's address. You are tuned to Radio Pakistan. The President, Mr. Zulfiqar Ali Bhutto, invited to Larkana on the 22nd of this month heads of diplomatic missions in Pakistan. Here is a radio report of the event. Larkana, the hometown of the President, hung out its bunting and banners as the people prepared to welcome the President's distinguished guests. Preparations were afoot a few days before. Roads were decorated with flags and streamers, and along the railway siding, shamianas were put up. Blooms and flowers of the season in pots and neatly arranged beds along the roads added colour to the arrangements. The special train carrying the diplomats and their wives pulled into Larkana at 6:30 in the morning. After a warm welcome by central ministers and senior government officials, some of the guests left for a duck shoot on the nearby picturesque lakes. Others, at about 9:30, left for Mohenjo-Daro. They were accompanied by the governor of Sindh, Mr. Mumtaz Ali Bhutto, and the central minister for Education, Information and Broadcasting, Mr. Abdul Hafiz Pirzada, the central minister for Political Affairs, Communications and Natural Resources, Mr. Ghulam Mustafa Jatoi. The distinguished visitors went round this most ancient site, the famous Indus Valley civilization which flourished here 5,000 years ago. This civilization was contemporary of the Mesopotamian civilization. The well-planned city with brick buildings, elaborate drainage system, public worshipping place, and institution of priests clearly indicates that it was the capital town of the Indus Valley civilization, a popular metropolis of great importance, whose people had achieved an astounding sophistication in well-organized civic and economic life in those early days. A lunch was given in honor of the diplomats and their wives. They were also entertained to Sindhi folk music. Here are impressions recorded by our representative with some of the heads of missions in Pakistan and their wives. Madam Bedie Karadurjak, wife of the ambassador of Turkey.
You see, I found this really very interesting and fascinating. It's very well preserved, and when you think that it goes back 5,000 years, it's really, I mean, something. Ornaments, we have seen at the museum, they were really very interesting because some of them we still use.
It is used?
Yes.
It is used in Turkey?
Yes, in Turkey, this comb. Not, of course, very often, but in some houses you can still find. And the jewelry of the women, I mean, you can use them even now. Some of them, they were so nice.
His Excellency Mr. Chang Tung, Ambassador of China.
From this historic site in Mohenjo-Daro, we can see the long-standing history of the Pakistan people, who are very industrious and wise and brave people. Yes, I have noticed that those stone articles, objects, and the pottery used in ancient times by your people here bear very much of the resemblance of those used in China in ancient times.
Yes. Thank you.
His Excellency Dr. M.H. Mashaik Faradani, the ambassador of Iran.
I found another proof of old relation between Iran and Pakistan. When I have seen this Mohenjo-Daro, this is a very, very big similarity between the old monuments and old civilization of Iran and Pakistan. This is the best proof in comparison with Mohenjo-Daro and what discovered from Susa of the southwest of Iran and of Khuzestan and some other parts of Iran. Yes, it was, this similarity existed. between these two old civilizations from 5,000 years ago.
5,000 years ago, yeah.
His Excellency Mr. Karen Quix, the ambassador of Belgium.
I think we've come a long way, but still it seems so near. Near to the way human people live. And it's the second time I see it.
The chargé d'affaires of the Netherlands, His Excellency Mr. G.H.J. Zuidberg.
I think it's very impressive to see this, to realize that there's been a culture here 2,500 years ago, which we West Europeans do not think so much about when we look back to our own history, that the cultural life started in this area in the subcontinent. So we are very impressed with what we have seen today.
His Excellency the Ambassador of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, Mr. Choi Gokman.
We are very happy to see the ancient civilization of Pakistani people and the energy, wisdom, and the great labor. We found Pakistani people are very industrious and civilized from the ancient times. Very much interesting.
The chargé d'affaires of the United States, Mr. Sidney Sobers.
I am pleased to say that I did not wait so long to see it the first time. I have already seen it last year, but it was such an interesting thing that, of course, when the president invited us to come, I was delighted, not only so we could be with the president, but also to see Mohenjo-Daro. Also, Mrs. Sober had not had a chance to see it, so I was very glad that she could, too. What has attracted me is not so much the bricks and the drains and the main street and the stupa, which are wonderful of themselves, but what has attracted me is the recollection of the glory of an ancient civilization that was built on this land 5,000 years ago. So it is the idea of the glory more than the bricks that has attracted me, yes.
The ambassador of Iraq in Pakistan and the doyen of the diplomatic corps, His Excellency Al-Sayed Abdul Qadir Al-Gaylani.
You see, I have been to Sindh, but it's the first time
here.
Very interesting, and for me in particular, because, you know, there is a great link between the civilization of Mohenjo-Daro and the civilization of Iraq. There is link. And so for me, it is of a great importance to see it and visit. Actually, the culture, you almost, when you examine it, there are lots of similarities. But the only thing that, as you see in Mohenjo-Daro and in Iraq as well, are most grateful to the president for very, very kindly inviting us. Everybody was happy, everybody is happy, everybody is grateful, and he gave us the opportunity to meet our brethren here.
The ambassador of Saudi Arabia, His Excellency Sheikh Mohammed Al Abdullah Al Mutlaq.
I am very happy to visit this side of Pakistan. And very thanks to President Bhutto to give this opportunity for this visit.
A dinner was held at night at the President's residence, Al-Murtaza, in Larkana. And a memorable visit for the distinguished guests drew to a close. The special train left Larkana at 2 o'clock on Sunday morning on its journey back to Rawalpindi, and the diplomats returned to Islamabad. The President, Mr. Zulfikar Ali Bhutto, invited to Larkana on the 22nd of this month heads of diplomatic missions in Pakistan. You've been listening to a radio report of the event. With that, Radio Pakistan closes this national hookup.
لقد استمعتم أيها الأصدقاء يا من وقفتم وإيانا ساعة العسرة إلى قصة نهر السند العظيم والذي له في صفحات تاريخ الإسلام أنصعها ويعرفه المسلمون والعرب من خلال أمجاد الإسلام وفتوحاته. هذه القصة مهداة إليكم يا رفاق السلاح من الشعب الباكستاني، والذي يكن لكم عظيم الحب وخالص التقدير. تقدمها إذاعة باكستان كمساهمة منها في تقوية الروابط بين الشعبين، وللتعبير عن حب هذه الأمة للشعب الليبي البطل ورئيسه المقدام. وكلنا أمل أن تكونوا قد عشتم حقا على ضفاف هذا النهر الخالد، واستمتعتم بمناظره الخلابة، وقضيتم وشعب السند ليالي سمره وأفراحه.